The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
Four. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now it's True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here is David Littlejohn with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn, excited to share the best Tuesday you've had all week. And stoked in studio with me today, we've got
Derek Simmons.
All right, who is everybody? Come on.
Everybody's favorite attorney.
I say, if he's not your favorite attorney, you're doing it wrong, right? And then
Matt Dixon.
All right, we're all here, and it's the end of the year, guys. Can you believe it? How did that sneak up?
Actually, it seems like it's been like 4, 5, 6 years since the last set of holidays.
that's
and it was easily a decade before the one before that.
Yeah. How'd that sneak up? It's like, well, you know what? 2019 feels like a generation ago.
It does.
2020 was like, oh, thank goodness we got over it. And then 2020 felt like we got stuck in a feedback loop or something.
And not the good one.
No,
not the good one. We saw Groundhog Day, and this wasn't it.
Exactly. You know, I will say that for all of the, you know, there's a whole string of things where we could lament the challenges of 2021. I think there are bright spots.
Right? Name one. Go.
My kids are back in school.
There you go.
Right? And that's a legitimate bright spot where, and I'm going to do my very, very best to keep this like really like neutral turf. I'm not picking on the circumstance of the day, but you know, largely our younger population has dodged a lot of the bullets that have come with the pandemic. And so I think it's really a good thing in whatever circumstance that they're getting to resume a little bit of normalcy. So I will call that a win, especially compared to 2020, which was so disruptive.
That's true.
So many ways.
Derek, what about you?
Well, one of the things that I saw this year that I was really excited about is I just finished annual meeting season for my favorite corporate and LLC clients that run businesses. And everybody's doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Everybody would love to have more workers to help them be even more productive, which is so much different than, say, 2008 when people were just trying to get out of business as fast as they could.
Yeah, trying to hang on or to, you know, minimize the damage.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it's, I don't have the answer, but this is like a mystery to me, wrapped in a conundrum, hidden away in a vault somewhere. How is it that we have such low unemployment published and yet so much help wanted everywhere?
It's true. I had this discussion with my brother over the weekend. My theory was that the government money, whether it was the right idea, the wrong idea, we just had to do something. The government money has screwed up the market.
I think that that's a broad stroke description, but I think it's accurate. Right?
And so it's hard to tell exactly how it screwed it up or how long it's going to take to sort itself out. But I'm guessing 18 months before we see anything. 18 months after the end of the government help / interference with the markets till we see it come back to regular scheduled programming.
So do we – now I'm going to kind of – this is a how many angels can dance on the head of a pin question, right? So where does that date start where the intervention has – ended?
Like, good question.
You know, I kind of have in my mind like end of September, because we sort of saw the wrap up of the extension of unemployment benefits. We did see some advancing of child tax credits, but largely those were advances of money that people were going to likely receive anyway.
And we're not sure we're done.
Yeah. Well, that's the other, that's the wild card too, is like that's sort of a marker, but yeah, it's still ambiguous as to whether or not here's a goofy one, right? EIDL loans aren't being repaid right now.
And they're not letting people repay them.
Right. That's the weird part, is if you want to repay the EIDL loan, there's no option to do so yet. So, weird.
It is weird. And we also have the potential for an extension of things like an eviction moratorium.
Yeah.
Now, eviction moratorium, I like the sound of that. It sounds way worse if you have people living rent-free for continued long periods, which will continue to be an interference in the market.
Yeah, that's a massive one from a real estate value perspective. I mean, it kind of messes up the market a lot, right? And I don't know how, because there's a couple things that play in that one, right? I mean, one, you've got, and let's be clear, right? I'm not advocating that you create a homelessness situation. That's not...
not helpful.
Yeah, that's not what we're shooting for here. But if you're a landlord and you can't get a tenant out, it's one thing if it's a good tenant and so you get some kind of supplement for the rent to kind of at least minimize the damage. That's still market disruptive, by the way. Just because the landlord gets paid, if somebody else is not, you are artificially manipulating the supply and demand curve right there. So back to your previous point, right, Derek?
Yeah.
But what if you have a problem tenant that's destroying the place and you still can't get them out, right? Now the landlord gets to own all of the liability and has none of the upside.
And let's take one further step to say, aside from the eviction moratorium, the courts have been largely shut down. I mean, they've started to come back online, mm-hmm. but for a long time they weren't. And what that meant was eviction cases got moved back, and so did most everything else that was civil, to where it was even more difficult to evict someone for cause.
Yeah. It's so these types of market disruptions are, that phraseology feels really inadequate. Oh, it's a market disruption, right? I mean, this is a significant change in the supply demand input output parameters here.
We made giant pulls on big levers that we've never moved before. And so maybe we'll look back in 20 years and say, this was a great idea. I'm so glad we did that. Think New Deal. Think Roosevelt. People mostly say, hey, that wasn't a bad idea. On the other hand, maybe it was World War II that got us out of the Depression.
Yeah.
Hard to say.
I mean, history's, of course, you know, we can data fit history if we want to. I agree with your, it's a mixed bag. And it always is, right? And this is like the president taking credit for one thing and blaming the other guy for something else. We've joked together on the radio.
Right.
If you've listened for any amount of time, you've heard me and Derek on, you know we joked about that, right? Oh, well, hey, I'll take the credit I don't deserve, right? But no, I'm going to blame somebody else if it's bad news. I agree. It's a really interesting time. Here's the data point that I think people maybe haven't heard this one. And I think it's a big deal. So first of all, we got to recognize that our economic output has grown considerably. Okay. So if you think about the size of the United States GDP, right, gross domestic product, we're now somewhere close to $21 or $22 trillion a year in GDP. Okay. With a T, that's massive. Now, here's the other crazy stat for you, just because these are fun stats, right? Apple, as a company, is approaching $3 trillion in market capitalization. So imagine that. Apple is approaching, what is that, about one-sixth or so of the total gross domestic product of the United States in terms of relative value. Now, that's not the... keep in mind, market capitalization isn't the same as GDP. It's just... for numerical comparison, it's interesting.
For one thing, they're spelled differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And for another, they are totally unrelated. But other than that, they're really similar, right? The part that people don't see is where we created money and it's off balance sheet. Okay? Because here's the really interesting one. You go back to about 2008. Okay? Remember the first financial crisis when Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers disappeared?
It was no fun. I do remember.
I do too. I mean, we were there. Derek and I have been kind of running this parallel adventures for a long time. And back then it was happening, right? So 2008, I think the technical term for it was sucked. Yeah, right?
Technical legal term, but yes, that's what it was.
And so we're losing banks, the whole system's collapsing, and we have the first program that comes out from the government. Here's pop quiz. Who remembers the first rescue program and what it was called?
I don't got this one. Do you have it, Derek?
I do not.
The TARP. program.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Troubled Asset Relief Program. So 2008, and this was back when Tim Geithner was the Treasury Secretary, and they get together and they say, what do we do about this thing? And they decide to create a loan facility for banks, but and they say it's optional, but it's not really optional. It's you're taking this loan. And as memory serves, it was $800 billion. And everybody just went, whoa, that number was unheard of. $800 billion in government rescue program. It made the savings and loan crisis of the late 80s look pretty patty cake. And the Federal Reserve then goes through a period of trying to structurally force interest rates down to stimulate the economy. First it was rate cuts, and then what came next? Had two letter initials, right? Starts with a Q, ends in an E.
Qualitative easing.
That's really so close you get.
I know. I totally get
quantitative
credit for that.
Easing, right? So that oftentimes. Yeah.
Well, quantitative is more, but qualitative is how good it is.
Right.
It was good easing.
Yes.
Good. Some really good easing.
So well done, right? So quantitative easing, bond buying, right? So the government steps in and buys the treasuries, the Federal Reserve, which is not the government. Interestingly enough, the Federal Reserve is not a government entity. But it steps in,
sure it
buys
isn't.
The treasuries. Yeah, sure.
It walks
we
and talks
people
like
run
it.
But, you know, it's a quasi-government.
It's a quasi-government.
But it is not a taxpayer-funded entity, unless you get into the, well, we are buying treasuries, and, well, when do we pay them back? Anyway, this program, we'll save you the boredom of the Federal Reserve explanation. Just know that the Federal Reserve did something really interesting. Now, what did I say that our current GDP was?
Was it 21?
Yeah, about 21
trillion.
Okay.
I remember Apple. That was three.
Which is 3 trillion. Yeah. Good. And then the Federal Reserve, which also has a balance sheet that has a total amount of assets on it, right? So the Federal Reserve has a net worth on its balance sheet. Now, here's the trick question for everybody. What does the Federal Reserve have in common with Enron?
Are you taking us to the break and
letting
that
later?
Yeah,
we'll come back after the break.
It's a cliffhanger.
And I'm going to, you're like, did you seriously loop Enron in with the Federal Reserve? Yeah, it is a stretch, but stick around. It'll make sense. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
Matt Dixon.
And Derek Simmons.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang. Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Today, Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon
and Derek Simmons. And we're talking about quantitative easing.
Yes.
Although qualitative was way more fun.
I know. We're at the break, I was sitting there going like, qualitative easing, it sounds like a laxative or something. It's like, oh, my gosh. That's,
I bet there's a lesson in there, Dave, and I bet you'll find what it is.
All I know is it's messy. So
no.
I was pulling a fun example here. Explained it to the guys at the break because we're not crazy. How does Enron and the Federal Reserve relate?
Give them a backdrop.
Yeah, you got to know the story of Enron. You guys want you, Derek? You remember the Enron story?
Vaguely. Okay. These were energy traders, primarily.
Right. Yeah, it's a publicly traded company, and they were trading energy.
And then what they did was they had some really bad investments, and what they did was they spun off companies and moved all their crap over into there.
Right.
Do I have that right so far?
Yeah.
It still sounds like qualitative easing, frankly, but I hear you.
Manipulating the balance sheet.
Really qualitative, questionable qualitative easing there. So think about it as what they were attempting to do and then what happened, right? So Enron doesn't exist anymore. They went bye-bye, and what they were a darling. It's like the number one performing stock in the late 90s. Everything was going bananas, and then they get caught with these, you know, this is the air quotes version, accounting irregularities. Okay. And that that may as well be like a sword through the heart of a company anymore. If you hear the phrase accounting irregularities, that is bells, whistles, sirens, danger. Okay? And the markets know this. It's a dog whistle now. But
because if you add 2 and 3 and get 7, that's irregular.
Yes.
Okay.
And what they were doing is by creating these other entities and sort of what they're trying to do is take all the bad assets and hide them on the off of their balance sheet so that investors would see all the good stuff but not the bad stuff. And then in
ooh,
the audit,
shiny.
Yeah, in the audit process, it was sort of discovered that maybe there's not as good at, you know. And before, you know, people figured out, wait a second, it's not all shiny. And the house of cards collapsed, right? And once one investor wanted out and everybody else wanted out, it was like a herd of lemmings, and the stock ultimately imploded and was gone.
So do we want out of the Federal Reserve?
That is a really interesting rhetorical question. My suggestion is probably not. At this point, we're really deep into it. But you will talk in some circles. The folks that are really economically conservative, so like Austrian economic theorists, or folks that would argue for something like we should go back to a gold standard where we're not a fiat currency, but we're actually backed by some kind of tangible commodity. Those folks tend to say, grumble, grumble, Federal Reserve, bad.
But I guess we should first of all say now, how is the Federal Reserve doing what Enron did?
Well, that's kind of the key is the Federal Reserve, unlike Enron, you can see them do it, but most people are missing it, right? You may have heard that the federal debt has exceeded our GDP. We have more than $21 trillion in GDP, but we have more than $21 trillion worth of debt. I think we have like $26 trillion or something. Don't quote
yikes
me on that one. But our debt to GDP ratio has flipped, right? So we now are borrowing more than we're earning each year. Be the equivalent of, hey, I got... Now, people do this all the time, by the way, right?
Sinking in credit card debt, just...
Well,
keep putting it on the
debt,
credit card.
I was thinking like a mortgage, right?
Oh,
somebody buys
okay
a mortgage and their house is worth more than they earn per year.
But if you're borrowing that same amount every year, you will never get out.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that they borrow $21 trillion per year.
Okay.
But what happens is, at first, you can imagine having an adjustable rate mortgage. And at first, hey, let's make it really easy numbers. Let's say I make $100,000 a year, but I have a $5,000 a month mortgage. Pretty high, but let's just say, well, that's what it is, right? So over the course of a year, I have $60,000 in mortgage payments.
Right.
And I make $100,000. And we're going to ignore taxes right now and all that other hoopla. That's just where you land, okay? But your variable rate goes up, and now your mortgage payment is $10,000 a month, but your income is $100,000. Right, or your income is 100 for the year, you get 120,000 in payments. That's the concern, is that if interest rates begin to go higher, our ability to service the debt that we have amassed will start to exceed our ability to collect taxes to service the debt. Okay, so that is a structural problem.
And we're knocking on the door.
Well, so some would argue that the Federal Reserve is cornered and has to keep interest rates low, which forces the stimulative environment that has created some of the weird problems, really big levers being pulled, right?
Right.
And we don't know what the outcome will be. And I don't either, just so you know. I mean, I can give you my theories, but big deal. The reason the Federal Reserve is like Enron is because we don't count their balance sheet in the debt. And the Federal Reserve, back in 2008, before the financial crisis, had under $1 trillion on their balance sheet. It was a little over $800 billion. And today, at last I checked it, and again, some fact checker can go out and get the, you know, go look for the broad strokes on this one. Don't quote me on the exact number, but this is going to be pretty close. The Federal Reserve now has something like $9.2 trillion on their balance sheet.
And you're saying that doesn't even register on the countries.
It's not part of the country's debt.
So remember, it's that unseen
quasi
number.
Quasi-government, unrelated entity.
Right.
And just like Enron putting debt somewhere else on the books, like, well, the Federal Reserve has got all this debt now because it's bought all these treasuries and things. So their balance sheet's gotten huge. The modern monetary theorist would say, so what? do you have to pay it back? Like, does the Federal Reserve have to pay itself back or pay the debt back? The government is, you know, paying interest to what? It's kind of like, you know, I used one of my credit cards to pay my other credit card. Do you just bounce it back and forth? I don't know the answer to this. I just know that when you have a full faith and credit of the government backing your fiat currency, what happens if people lose faith?
It does make me feel squeamish to use one credit card to pay off another, even if it is totally legal.
Yeah. It's like, well, you know, one of them's at 15%, the other one's at zero. So that makes it cool, right? It's like, well, no, it makes it work in that moment, but it didn't address the behavior that got you there.
Exactly.
Right? So that's kind of the issue. And I don't know. I've done the math on the COVID spending and so forth. When I looked at it, it was something akin to like $12,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country is the money that we created out of nowhere. And what I will suggest is if that number is about accurate, that has economic impacts when you conjure $12,000 per person in the country and then throw it into the supply and demand system as we already knew it. And you're like, well, what happens now? And you're like, well, let's get some popcorn and watch.
I had this discussion with Alex, my oldest son.
Ah, yes.
He's been on the radio, my favorite paratrooper at the Air Force Academy. I said,
is he in town next week? Can we get him back for more stories?
He's not. He's leaving.
Oh,
he's got to go back to school. But anyway, I said, we printed a bunch of money and we mailed it out. We, the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, that's not exactly what we did. We didn't print more money. And after discussion, what I really meant was we borrowed it from our grandchildren. We took money from the future and we mailed it out.
Kind of.
Because we're going to have to, somebody's going to have to pay it back.
That's the weird thing. Theory, though, right? Do we have to pay it back?
Well,
if it's on the Federal Reserve's balance sheet and it can stay there in theory,
right?
Well,
then do we ever pay it back, or do we just keep racking up that?
Or what happens if the Treasury simply lets the debts expire, right? So Treasury owes money and they have a balloon payment at the end. What if the Federal Reserve just says, we'll forgive the repayment.
Interesting.
We'll just write it off.
That's an interesting thought.
Could the federal government write off debt? And what does that do to the money supply, right? Because if you're forgiving debt to the government, you're taking money supply out, right? You're reducing the money in circulation in theory. And you're raising
Could that help control inflation rates?
It's part of the quantitative easing process, so yes. Right, but we're getting into really, this is kind of lofty economic theory, and I think it goes back to that how many angels can dance on the head of a pin question.
Like, 37.
You don't know the answer. What if one angel's bigger? How big's the pin? Like, we just don't know the variables, and we won't know until after the fact what did or didn't work. And here's a really weird part. We may not really know for years, and by the time we kind of know, we'll have thrown so many new things at it that will be hard. It will obfuscate the truth, right?
Yeah.
It's a complicated thing. If we thought it was simple, we were in the wrong business.
Yeah. Well, and so this brings me to the what do you do theory about this. And the answer is not a cliffhanger wait for the break. The answer is very simple. Do the best you can. Right? Play the hand you're dealt, because I can't stop the Federal Reserve's behavior. Right? Can you?
No, this has long been the same advice that I've been giving people about Social Security payments.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm early 50s, and I have never expected to get any Social Security.
Right. And likely you will receive it.
And likely I will, but I never planned on it.
Right.
I had to plan around it because I didn't expect it to be there.
Yep.
And so it's the same sort of deal. You plan as though this is going to be a problem at some point, but there's nothing else. It's not going to change your behavior other than taking care of yourself.
Yeah. So
I like that.
This will be fun. I am going to cliffhanger everybody on this one, though, which is what's the end of the world trade look like, right? If the end of the world was going to happen, what should we do as investors? And then
guns and whiskey?
What should we do if the end of the world doesn't come? But we got to take our obscene profit break first. So
sounds good.
Or does it? Are we waiting on the...
The music didn't start, did it?
No.
You're
no,
giving me that not. Look like
when
it's not coming through
the
headphones.
When you reach the end of the world, this sort of thing happens.
I guess. Maybe the hard break needed to take longer.
Commercials right. go away at the end of the world?
I give up.
I could give
you know
up.
What? It's
going
to happen.
With that.
I am going to give you the answer anyway for the end of the world trade. I know. And the end of the Matt already gave it out. It's my favorite joke in the financial lexicon. What do you do if the end of the world is coming? Sell everything and buy guns and whiskey.
Did I actually get it?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
No, the guns and
maybe
whiskey
I have
trade
been paying
is,
attention during
is
these.
Like the ultimate Douglas County meme trade, if you will, which just says, hey, if your money's going to be worth nothing, what you actually want is tradable commodities.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you have to believe.
I actually know some people. That's all they invest in is guns.
Yeah. And I consider that a dangerous investment for probably reasons that you will chuckle about.
Okay.
Not because, like, I'm not anti-gun or anything like that. Because people that think, like, if you're not diversified, then you're just over-invested in a single sector. Historically,
that's
guns
true.
Have actually been pretty good store of value, and they've
oh,
gone
yeah.
up. So they've outpaced inflation largely, and they've done a really good job of that. It's an interesting, from a commodity trading perspective, they are also legislatively, forgive the pun, but they are in the crosshairs, right?
That was a good pun.
I mean, because we constantly have, I mean, we do have an evolving culture in this country, and whether you agree or disagree with it is not my point.
No, there's financial risk associated with
Absolutely.
Buying weapons in the same way there is in buying Bitcoin or alternative currencies.
Yeah.
Once they become regulated,
exactly.
they may not be on the same trajectory.
I'm really, and that's a great segue. That's one we really should talk about that. So here, look, there's music now. We'll use that as our segue. When we come back, how are Bitcoins and guns alike?
Ooh, can we title the show that?
Yeah,
Bitcoins and Gun.
All right, that and more when we come back. Stick around. This is Dave Littlejohn.
Matt Dixon.
And Derek Simmons. And
you got True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where if you are just joining us, you've missed out on all kinds of fun. I've got special guests with me in studio today. Well, so normally, Matt.
Yeah,
Matt's here.
I'm here.
Matt's here a lot, but.
I feel special.
Yeah, so Derek, we're super stoked to have you. Just a reminder, so. I understand you practice law.
I do.
But seldom do you have to sue people.
Almost never.
Right? So you're the friendly lawyer?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm business, estate planning, wills, trusts, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh. And so if you've ever asked yourself, do I need to incorporate? You need to call Derek.
And Derek right? will tell you, yes.
And that's he'll say yes. Is that what I just heard? Like, I was like,
not always.
No, usually there's more a consultative approach than that. how do they reach you?
My number is 677-7185.
All right. So there you go. And the area
but,
code.
But more fun is the website, seriousbusiness.law.
Yes. You know, Serious Business sounds like it could have been a Harry Potter character.
It should have, yeah. But it wasn't, no. Serious Business would be in a parody.
Yeah, Serious
Business. We must write this one later in our spare time.
We might now. That Serious Business does sound like it should be a spoof musical, right? That there you go. And the guy needs to. There's got to be a hat with a feather in it. That's just all there is to it. So.
And then macaroni. Go ahead.
Yes. So, all right. If you're wondering what we've been talking about up to this point, so are we. But you can find out on the podcast. It'll be available tomorrow. Go to littlejohnfs.com. Check under the Educate tab, and we'll get it posted there so you can get caught up. We have covered a lot, and I think—
Where did we leave off?
Where we left off was Bitcoin and guns.
Okay.
Right? Bitcoin and guns. And if you're wondering, how are these relating? Don't worry. Derek's going to tell you.
Derek is going to tell you that Matt is our expert in this particular topic.
And then I'm going to pass it back to David, and we're going to keep going like that until the end of the show.
Great. Oh, no, I mean, so we're teasing about it. But you brought this point up, Derek. Like Bitcoin, so I started with the guns and whiskey trade is like if the world's really coming to an end, like if the U.S. dollar is going to tank, and there's people out there, they have told me, like, I think it's going to crash. I'm going to go buy all gold. And I look at them, like they have two heads, and go, why gold? Well, you know, because I can trade it for stuff. I go, well, what makes you think anybody's going to want gold if the world collapses? What you need is stuff that's tradable for stuff that other people want. So it's like, you need guns and whiskey. They're both useful, right? And that was your joke. It's the guns and whiskey trade. But really, it's a commodities and physical, tangible goods that will hold their value. Why?
You know someone's out there like, that's why I invest in real estate. You know.
Well, and real estate too. But here's the catch to real estate, just like any other assets for that matter that are physical and tangible. Can you secure them and maintain the right to them?
That's the challenge. A lot of the value in real estate comes from the fact that we've got giant systems that protect your interest in that.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got title security and then actually the infrastructure system around it. This is one of those where people are like, there's going to be some real Jeffersonian Republican types that I'm going to piss off right here. And I'm going to giggle when I do it.
Ooh.
Right? Because we all remember at one point there was this, maybe we all don't, bunch of people are going to remember though, that Barack Obama got sort of caught in a statement where he said, well, you didn't build that. And it just created all this blowback from the right-wing side of the aisle because it was the implication that entrepreneurs didn't create things, that the government basically did it. That was not the context of what was said, and I will defend that, right? Even if I can also say, I did not vote for Barack Obama, that's okay, right? But I'm going to defend him on this one. He never said that. The context of what he said was, entrepreneurs that build things do so in a framework that was provided through public infrastructure. And without that infrastructure, they wouldn't have had the platform with which to be entrepreneurial. That was the context of what he said.
This is what I've always started with when I explain to my kids what government does. Nobody wants to build roads.
Right.
But we all want to drive on them.
Yeah.
And they're part of the backbone of everything that happens.
And this is why I am not a zero tax guy. I don't say taxation is theft. I say good governance remains as small as it can while still providing an enhanced return on investment. If you put a dollar in and get more than a dollar's worth of value out, that's a good investment, right? Where we disagree with is where how we value some of those things, and I understand that, right? And we'll continue to, that debate will go on. But real estate oftentimes is valuable because of the infrastructure around it, right? That premium corner lot with the high traffic area and the stoplight and everything, without the stoplights and roads, it's just a piece of dirt.
It's true.
Or the same piece of dirt that is 20 miles from I-5 versus right on I-5, they're worth different amounts.
Absolutely. And so it's because of the location relative to oftentimes other public infrastructure, okay, to include utilities and so forth. So I am not myopic, and I'm not going to – well, not about this.
You've got your spots.
I have my spots. I got lots of blind spots. But the point is simply that real estate is one of those where can you secure it? Okay. I think blockchain is very interesting for that, by the way. A decentralized database that can track chain of custody.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting. I think title companies need to be worried that long-term blockchain could supplant them.
That's interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that is a business model that title companies need to be figuring out how to engage in blockchain usage because it's that or become obsolete.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm sure that they're on top of this. Right. But it's likely to cost them a lot of money because it's likely to drive the premiums down on title because the title searching is going to get easier and easier and easier when you have a decentralized but validated chain of custody.
Do we want to dive into the weeds on blockchain and talk about that?
No, we don't.
No, we do not.
Okay.
We want to hear about Bitcoin and guns.
Well,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So back to end of the world dollars gone, right? This is people's case for Bitcoin, and it's people's case for if the dollar is going to disappear, why you want to own physical assets. And why gold versus anything else? I say, who cares about gold? I want the stuff
you can use.
You can use and you can trade, right? Fungible, useful, portable stuff. Gold was really valuable back in the day because it was small and it was rare and it was hard to duplicate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And there were simple methods that you could use to confirm its authenticity. Right? How hard was it? How much displacement?
In the cartoons, they always bid on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was a real thing, by the way. Right? So that was all part of the gig. Okay. I don't know that gold has to be the useful thing. Okay. Guns and whiskey are, and we joke about that, but guns are under regulatory scrutiny. Like it or not, you can be an ardent Second Amendment believer, and I'm going to respect that, and I'm not even going to disagree with you on that, but I'm going to be a realist too, and a pragmatist in me says, you may lose that vote eventually because the more young people that, you know, begin to change, you can rewrite laws.
Does that drive the price up or down, though?
At first, it can drive it up because of scarcity, but mm-hmm. if they are made illegal, just like what if we make blockchain, what if they change the regulatory environment around it? What if it, you know, all these NFTs, I've said it on air and I'll say it again. I think that there's a lot of shady stuff going on in the NFT market right
yeah.
now. And you don't see somebody create a piece of artwork that goes from $50 to purchase it to $300,000 because it's such a really cool piece of artwork, right? There's weird stuff going on right now. It's very frothy market, very, very tulip bubble kind of marketplace. Mm-hmm. If you remember the 1500s and the Dutch tulip bubble, it's that kind of weirdness. And I think that there's a lot of like money laundering and other crap going on in there because it's anonymous.
Yeah.
High transaction volume. And you can, I think that's where money laundering is occurring right now.
Hmm.
I think it's a ripe target.
So NFTs are not the things I want to put my money into if the end of the world is coming.
It's I would suggest that these things are, none of them are investments. They're all speculation. And I don't mind you speculating. Okay. And you may be able to be wildly profitable at it. But I tell people, understand what you are doing. If you believe that going to the blackjack tables is investing, I'll disagree with you. You may be really, really good at it and can count cards and improve your odds. It's still gambling to me. It's different than investing. And I think you're speculating with these asset classes for now. Institutions are doing it too. They're seeking legitimacy right now. So I'm not here to trash them. I'm just saying, be aware of your arena of combat, people.
It's so true. These two investments, guns and Bitcoin, both have some risk to them.
They both have a lot of regulatory risk to them. That's my take on this. And so Bitcoin doesn't typically hurt people the way somebody with a gun can. And I guess I phrase that on purpose that way, right? But that, so when you look at how things get targeted from regulation, you can come at it from different emotional angles, right? And that's how politics work. But make no mistake, the IRS is more concerned about Bitcoin than your guns.
Oh, for sure.
Right? And the
they
IRS
want their
is trying
fair
to
share.
Figure out, how are people hiding our piece of the action? And when you have a 20-some-odd trillion-dollar debt to get paid off, you're looking in the sofa cushions. And that's where this stuff lives
Bitcoin
right now.
Bitcoin is in your sofa. I like that. So,
anyway, well, look, we're running a little long here. Let's grab our last break, and we've come back a few other key thoughts for the end of the year. Is this the last True Wealth program of 2021? But we got to take this break. Stick around. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
Matt Dixon.
And Derek Simmons.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of 2021 in the True Wealth Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn. In studio today with me,
Matt Dixon
and Derek Simmons.
And we are going to do, for the last segment of the year, this was a fun and newly invented game that we're going to play, I guess, right?
It is.
So what do we call it?
All right. This is Bitcoining.
Bitcoining.
Yes, because what we're doing is we're going to coin terms, and then we're going to come up with definitions for them.
All right.
Financially relevant definitions.
Financial definitions to terms that you're going to give us. And so is this, are they real terms, false terms, or who knows? We're just going to go with it.
Yes, that is correct.
All right.
Actually, you did use one that I'm relatively sure is real, but I don't know what it means. NFTs.
Non-fungible token. NFT is non-fungible token.
I could not have made that up.
Here's what it is. I'd scribble something on a napkin, upload it in a digital format, and then charge you $100,000 for it, and you get the ownership of it digitally.
It's essentially securing copyright on something digital. So whether it's a piece of art, music, or anything else, because it's secured on the blockchain, you can validate its authenticity.
That is absolutely right, Dave.
Okay.
It is, in fact... money laundering. That's exactly
what it is. So,
all right. Here's my next one. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Pistology.
Ooh.
Oh, this to me sounds like the art of investing in handguns.
It does. That's a good guess, Matt. You want to add anything?
Pistology. I'm gonna go with the theories that David has when he's mad. He's pissed.
Yes.
David's pistology.
Yeah. The other one was like, isn't that a part of a flower's anatomy? So it was like, is this some kind of ologist thing where you study that because it's the reproductive parts of a flower?
Ooh.
Okay. No, it was not. It was in fact. When you invest in pistols.
Okay. I like it.
All right. Are you ready now?
Yes.
Corkscrew employment.
You really think well on your feet, by the way, Derek. Okay, I like this.
Corkscrew employment to me is when you have more than one job at the same time and you have to try to juggle the schedule between both employers without making either of them angry.
Ooh. Other thoughts, Matt?
I'm going to go with, like, you know, you've got the cork in the bottle. You put the corkscrew in there and just rip them out of the So I'm seeing, like, you're just getting ripped out of the job market. You're done. You're out of the bottle.
I was thinking more like folks that are put their left foot into the employment circle and then they take it out. They put their left foot in and they shake it all about.
So
but
like
that would
pokey,
be more
pokey.
That would be more
job search.
That would have been a better one. I should have used. Can we rewind or is this live?
It's live-ish.
It's live. Yeah. It's live every single time we do it. I understand. All right. Here's another one. Blarnum.
This sounds like something on a Nickelodeon program that you would dump on someone's head if they get an answer wrong.
I can't give you full points for that one, Matt.
Okay.
Say it again.
Blarnum.
Oh.
So it should be a financial definition.
It should.
It may, in fact, be
an acronym.
Blarnum.
But that would take a while to come up with.
It sounds like a cryptocurrency. Like I'm trading you some Blarnum.
Like we got to go Blarnum. Buy some Blarnum.
I got Blarnum at 4 cents earlier.
Yes.
And you have to talk in a pirate voice the whole time.
That's right.
Now it's worth 17.
All right.
17 cents.
All right. I did not get points.
Maybe
on that
it was
one,
the
Matt
pirate's
recall.
Cryptocurrency. The, maybe that was the original. We just don't know about it.
All right. Here's my last one.
Okay.
Chronoplasty.
That sounds real. I'm going that's real.
You didn't?
Yeah, I don't think you made that up.
Chronoplasty is the what we would call, this is an accounting term for manipulating a balance sheet to try to make it look better than it really does.
As though you'd done something earlier when in fact you haven't.
That was specifically, it's manipulating the time frame of when something occurs on the balance sheet. So chronoplasty.
So as far as I know, that wasn't a real term, but I think it is now.
I think
we have just created.
I think we could take that.
We created an NFT here, right? Does that work?
Yes. Okay. And so all you have to do now is
$100,000, Matt.
Yeah,
work it over.
We're gonna upload the audio feed.
I'm unaware of how, and then we need to stake it somehow. Also, that's part of the thing, because I don't know how you cook that steak. But
all right, I'm in.
Let's get rich. You know what? Let's make NFTs of the radio show. Like, you can buy a one of one. Every time we upload this, you can download it.
NFT. It's like, you could be the only one that has this information. And
that's
people
right.
People say, I don't know if that's worth it.
We're going to charge you $1.
It's like, what happens if... the whole point of the show is to distribute. It's technically a paid advertisement.
Oh.
I like that we've really turned this around. It's like, we did this show so well that nobody else should be able to hear it but you.
That's right.
But for the right price, we would consider it.
Yeah, I have to say that it's, generally speaking, I can be bought on most things. Not all, I will say, but most.
So that's Bitcoinage. We will do it again some other time.
This is fun. We need to bring this segment back. So, the next time that we have you as a guest, I think we need to load that one up. And what is the musical we're going to write? That was the other one that you started with. We were gonna make one on... Now, see,
we're drawing.
We're going to listen to our own podcast.
Yeah, we are.
Was it Blarnum?
No, Blarnum was a cryptocurrency.
That's right. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh gosh. Well, anyway,
it's on there. Go and take a listen. It's on the podcast.
Where can they find it, David?
LittleJohnFS.com. All right. And so, as you're gearing up for next year and you're planning your goals out and you're, planting that flag and posting your visions or whatever else. All right. So here's what I want to challenge you to. First, if you've got goals and you want an accountability partner, we will help you. You send us an email, right? Send it to info@littlejohnfs.com. That is the same email that you can send your questions on air if you got any other interesting ones. I know we have one probably for next week about non-deductible IRAs and the Roth conversion. We'll save that for later, but we're out of time for today. Derek, one more time, how do they reach you?
541-677-7185.
All right, Matt, how do they reach us?
541-375-0898.
All right, and what does everybody do after this program? Have yourself a wonderful new year. So thanks for tuning in as always. Until next time, this is Dave Littlejohn.
Matt Dixon.
And Derek Simmons. Happy New Year.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN. Catch you in 2022.
The preceding program was paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.